hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller Podcast for the 30th day of October 2019. As we called it when I was growing up in Detroit, Devil's Night. And of course, that was when all the vacant crack houses in the city were set on fire. I don't think they do that anymore. I don't know if there are enough people around. Plus, smoking is banned everywhere. Anyway, I'm Derek Hunter. Welcome to the show. Thanks for listening, downloading, telling a friend, doing all that good stuff. I encourage you, I implore you, in the strongest possible terms, to continue to do such things. And thank you for your efforts. We only grow because of you and your word of mouth. That's all we've got. So thank you for that. We've got a lot of stuff to get to. Ukrainian expert from the White House testified yesterday. New York Times think they've got a big story. Ooh, a big, big story. I'm not sure it's the story they want. I suppose, as is everything these days, it's a matter of perspective. You can find in it what you want. And I'll explain what I mean by that coming up. We also have the odd defense of Katie Hill continuing. Democrats are very, very upset that this congresswoman who was sleeping around with campaign staffers and probably congressional staffers, who was under an ethics investigation, was forced to resign. And they're wondering, would this have happened if she were a man? Well, it did happen to a man not that long ago. In fact, just 2 years ago, almost exactly 2 years ago. But it was a Republican, so it doesn't count. They're allowed to destroy Republicans, and nobody ever has to have any memory of it whatsoever. We have some unbelievable audio regarding that. So we got a ton of things to get to, of course. If you want to email me, Derek@dailycaller.com, D-E-R-E-K. I don't care how you spell it in the email, as long and the actual body of the text. As long as you spell it that way in the email address, it will get to me. If you want to enter to win a signed copy of Jarrett Stepman's book, The War on History, just email Derek@dailycaller.com and let me know that's what you want. Also have the Washington Post going off about how bad free speech is. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable day for liberals. We'll get to all of that and more. You've got to sit through the whole program. Sorry, I'm going to take up an hour of your day, but I'm going to start off with a little word from our sponsor. Joining me on the phone right now is Ronnie McMullen. Not only is he the Grand Poobah over at Life Change Tea, he's also the Grand Poobah of Ancient Life Oil, the CBD oil. Ronnie, CBD is wildly popular right now. Tell people what it is.
My CBD is from hemp extract. So it is an incredible product, natural product. I don't have any THC, so there's 0.003 or less THC, which that's the psychoactive drug that makes you high. My CBD will not make you high, but it will do great things for things like inflammation. It'll do great things for sleep, for anxiety. It'll do great things. There are people that have such a hard time sleeping, and they take a dropper full or half a dropper full, and they sleep like a baby. We have a salve, and I always tell people, and I usually put a special together with a salve and a tincture, which is the little bottle that helps everybody feel good. I usually put it together, and the reason I do is because the salve is the outside and the tincture is on the inside. So the salve, when you put the salve on your body, on a painful place, an elbow, a back, neck, whatever, and you put it, you'll see the pain go away within 15 minutes. And people go, wow, that really works. It's exciting. This is great. So if you think that's what it does on the outside, what's it doing on your inside? So it's a great product.
Well, you can find out for yourself what it's doing on the insides and the outsides at ancientlifeoil.com. A-N-C-I-E-N-T, lifeoil.com, all one word. Enter promo code Derek at checkout. You get free shipping. Ronnie, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you more about CBD oil in the future. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
That's ancientlifeoil.com. Don't forget promo code Derek at checkout for free shipping. All right, let's get into the news of the day, shall we? The big story, the one that had everybody on the left so excited. Ooh, they knew that they had somebody. They knew they finally had Trump. How many times have they thought they've had the president? Think about that. The only thing that they're missing is any evidence whatsoever, anything proving anything. But other than that, they've had Trump at least a half a dozen times just this year alone. Alexander Vindman, who's a lieutenant colonel who serves on the, who served at the White House, who was on, he speaks Ukrainian, and he was on the call. He's the first person to testify who was on the call. The Washington, or the New York Times had the story. Well, beforehand, just to recap the story, this is what was leaked. It's kind of weird because everything is top secret. Remember last week when Republicans dared enter the hearing room? Everything came to a screeching halt. It was an outrage. Democrats and the media, but I repeat myself, were very, very upset at how the Republicans had acted, how they endangered national security, even though nothing classified was being discussed, by entering the room and bringing with them their cell phones. Remember all of this last week. They were beside themselves with outrage. It was unacceptable the way that the Republicans did, yet somehow testimonies have leaked. Testimonies regarding this important information that must be kept from the American people have leaked. Now, considering the conga line of witnesses they've had go in and out of there, it's kind of telling that only two testimonies have leaked, right? Because if there was damning information in any of the other ones, you better believe that whoever is the source would have, Adam Schiff, would have gone directly to the Washington Post or the New York Times. They wouldn't have hesitated. They would have beaten a beeline. It would have been poof, be like the Roadrunner taken off. Meep, meep, and then poop, he's gone. Got all this stuff that they go directly. It's directly to the media, but not much of it has gone directly to the media. It's weird. But the colonel or Lieutenant Colonel Vindman's testimony managed to find its way there. And in it, he wrote, amongst other things, quote, "I realize that if Ukraine pursued an investigation into the Bidens and Burisma, it would likely be interpreted as a partisan play, which would undoubtedly result in Ukraine losing the bipartisan support it has thus far maintained." Is it his job to worry about what happens to Ukraine, or is it his job to represent and protect the interests of the United States of America? He finishes that paragraph with, quote, "This would undermine U.S. national security." I still don't understand how this would undermine U.S. national security. While, yes, we as the United States of America do want the Ukraine to remain free, if it weren't, I'm not really sure how that impacts the United States of America. Nobody's really explained that to me. But Mr. Vindman, I don't know. Why can't everybody be named Jones? Mr. Vindman was very, very concerned about Ukraine. In fact, he was working with the Ukrainian government to represent Ukrainian interests in the U.S. But why let that bother anybody? So he goes up there and he testifies. And then the New York Times again gets a scoop, a selective leak from Adam Schiff. They won't attribute it to Adam Schiff, but it's Adam Schiff. The headline, "White House Ukraine expert sought to correct transcript of Trump call." And they're all like, oh my God. "Lieutenant Colonel Alexander S. Vindman, who heard President Trump's July phone call with Ukraine's president and was alarmed, testified he tried and failed to add key details to the rough transcript." And this again had the left going, oh, cover up, cover up, cover up. So what? Because most people don't read past the headline, and that's why headlines are written that way and the way that they're written in general. The story written by, it took three reporters at the New York Times. Is there anybody at the end of this? A lot of times at the end, they list somebody else contributed to this piece. But nope. It only took three, so good for them. They're slowly becoming efficient over at the New York Times. Julian Barnes, Nicholas Fandos, and Danny Hakim cobbled together this report. Lieutenant Colonel Alexander S. Vindman, the top Ukraine expert on the National Security Council, told House impeachment investigators on Tuesday that the White House transcript of a July call between President Trump and Ukraine's president omitted crucial words and phrases, and his attempts to include them failed, according to three people familiar with the testimony. So this guy is more than likely the source to the whistleblower, since the whistleblower, as we know, was not directly involved, had no direct knowledge whatsoever of this phone call. Yet somehow this guy did, and he's supposed to keep it secret. But instead of, if he was so disturbed, and this is the thing, if he were so disturbed by what he'd heard on this phone call, and he wasn't, we'll get to that in a second. If he were so disturbed by what he'd heard in this phone call, that is what whistleblower laws are for. That is why they exist. If he, Vindman, were so disturbed and moved to the point of action because he could not stand because what was going on, he was the one who legally would have been entitled to whistleblower connections or protections. But he didn't do that. Instead, he talked to somebody who worked at the CIA, who did not have clearance to be on this call, who was not, in fact, on this call, and played a game of telephone and told them what he alleged to have happened in there. Now, I think that Mr. Vindman has some explaining to do, because as far as I know, in my rudimentary understanding of our laws, that would be a violation of them. Right? If you're not supposed to tell anybody about your job unless they were directly involved in it, but instead you went running to somebody who may well have had clearance to hear this information, we don't know, but may well have had clearance to have this information, but wasn't on the call. You are, as somebody who is supposed to keep that information private, didn't keep that information private. You shared it with somebody. For my money, that seems like a violation. That's just me. I'm old-fashioned that way. But they say, well, he tried to change because the transcript omitted important, crucial is the word they use, words and phrases. Ooh, and he failed. So he tried to alter government records? Is that his job? I don't think that's his job. The New York Times continues, the omission, Colonel Vindman said, included Mr. Trump's assertion that there were recordings of former Vice President Joseph R. Biden Jr. discussing Ukraine corruption and an explicit mention by Ukraine's President Zelensky of Burisma Holdings, the energy company whose board employed Mr. Biden's son, Hunter. Let's back up for a second, because this is kind of important. So there were omissions. Then he says that one omission was the president asserting. That's the word that the New York Times used, their assertion. Their assertion that there were recordings of Vice President Biden discussing Ukraine corruption. So I thought, what do you mean assertion? There are actual, why is the New York Times reporting this as, you know, there are, he made assertions, as if there are this weird, clandestine, perhaps, you know, wiretapped audio of Joe Biden out there discussing Ukrainian corruption. There is audio and video of Joe Biden talking about Ukrainian corruption. That's kind of what started all this mess. When Joe Biden told the, I forget which group he was talking to. It doesn't really, I think it was the Council on Foreign Relations. He said that I wanted to, you got $1 billion here, but you can't have it, Ukraine, unless you fire the prosecutor who happens to be investigating my son, the company that's paying my son. And suddenly the guy was fired. In fact, forget my synopsis of it. Listen to this bit of audio and tell me if this bit of audio might fit what the New York Times is saying is Trump's assertion that there was recordings of Vice President Biden discussing Ukraine corruption.
I was, not I, but it just happened to be, that was the assignment I got. I got all the good ones. So I got Ukraine. I remember going over convincing our team, our others, to convincing us that we should be providing for loan guarantees. And I went over, I guess, the 12th, 13th time to Kyiv, and I was going supposed to announce that there was another $1 billion loan guarantee. And I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to the press conference. We're not going to give you the $1 billion. They said, you have no authority. You're not the president. The president said. I said, call him. I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting the $1 billion. I said, you're not getting the billion. I'm going to be leaving here. And I think it was, 6 hours? I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Oh, son of a bitch. Got fired.
Well, I'm no diplomat, nor am I a spy. But to me, that sounds like a recording of Joe Biden talking about Ukrainian corruption. It also sounds to these layman ears an awful lot like a quid pro quo. Do this or you don't get the money. Again, what this is supposedly all about. Now, they're very upset in the media that this is, well, this is different because, A, it's Donald Trump, and Donald Trump is a Republican, whereas Joe Biden is a Democrat. And don't you understand the difference, you silly, silly little man? And I do understand the difference. That D is not actually a D. It is a shield that deflects any and all criticism about corruption. It just repels it. It's an amazing little thing. But that right there is a quid pro quo under the Obama administration put forward by Joe Biden, whose son was making $50,000 a month from a company that is notoriously corrupt in Ukraine, by the way, Burisma Holdings. And there was no stink about it. Now, I understand why Mr. Vindman would not have heard of that audio recording or seen the video, because he likely gets his information from the mainstream media, and they have done their best to deny that that exists. They want to pretend that that doesn't happen. And when it does come up in conversation, when somebody accidentally mentions it, it's quickly dismissed because they're all Democrats. They're all on the same team. But there it is. So when the New York Times reports that the omissions that Vindman was alleging were in the transcript included Trump's assertion that there were recordings of former Vice President Biden discussing Ukrainian corruption, there is no ambiguity about that. Right there is proof that Joe Biden did on tape discuss Ukrainian corruption. It is telling that somehow this became news. Now, the mention of Joe Biden is kind of interesting, or the mention of Burisma is interesting, because that came up from Zelensky, according to Vindman, not from President Trump. Now, why would it come up from Zelensky? By the way, all of this is in the transcript. He's just apparently thinks that it should have been there more. So who knows? But all this is in the transcript because Zelensky was elected on a platform of ending the corruption in Ukraine, which is nearly as rampant as the corruption in the Democratic Party. And Burisma Holdings was is a massive corporation in that country and wildly corrupt. Gets a lot of money from Russian oligarchs, from Ukrainian oligarchs. Works for, you know, corrupt interests, payoffs, bribes, money laundering, all of these things that were under investigation until Joe Biden came along and got the prosecutor looking into it fired. No one wants to go into any of those details. No one wants to talk about the corruption. They want to pretend that Donald Trump was making conditional the aid to Ukraine on whether or not they launched an investigation into Joe Biden and his son, which, again, it has to be repeated, and I apologize for repeating myself, didn't come up until 540 words later. The favor, as they famously point out in the media, that the president was asking for was helping our Attorney General and our Justice Department in the very legitimate and seemingly important, if you're at all interested in election interference by foreign entities, as Democrats claim to be, Ukraine's involvement in the 2016 election, which, while not as romantic, it doesn't have the built-in villain that Russia does with Vladimir Putin, but was every bit as pernicious and every bit as problematic But they don't care. It may well have been, Ukraine may well have been more involved. The Politico story from January 9th, 2017, that talks about how Ukraine is now going to have to apologize and suck up to Donald Trump because they and their government had been working with the Clinton campaign and Clinton allies to defeat Donald Trump as a way to suck up to her, suddenly has been memory-holed. That story might as well not exist, but that story, in fact, does exist. And it's very important that when you hear any of this crap that you're hearing from these leaks from Democrats, that you keep it in the proper perspective. You have to be aware of the fact of what Democrats are trying to distract you from. If you've ever, and they don't seem to do it anymore, because every time I've been in Times Square, no matter what time, I'm a night owl. So I walk through, whenever I'm in New York for any amount of time, I walk through around New York, the streets of New York, till 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. I like doing that. It's more vacant, but never completely vacant. Used to come across, you know, the guys selling watches, the guys selling bootleg DVDs, and the guys playing three-card Monty, find the queen, on the streets. You don't find that anymore, but if you ever have seen it, they depict it accurately in movies. The person doing it is talking nonstop as their hands are flipping around. They're making jokes. They're engaging with the person that they're playing with, mostly, exclusively, to distract from what their hands are doing and the sleight of hand that takes place in three-card Monty that makes it a profitable enterprise. When the media comes up with new so-called information that's a bombshell, you notice that they try to distract. When there's other information that they don't want, they try their best to distract. They don't mention the whole story. It's the same, it's a different tactic. It's the exact opposite tactic. It's focusing like a laser on something else, which is what the media does, rather than try to give somebody the whole big picture, which paints an entirely different scene than the little snippet they want you to pay attention to. But in the interest of justice and honesty, you need to pay attention to the whole thing. And that's why they write a story about, oh, he said he made an assertion that there was Joe Biden talking about corruption in Ukraine, when in fact there was. When they say that Zelensky brought up Burisma Holdings, well, they don't really give you the context of why he brought up Burisma Holdings. Burisma Holdings and the corruption of the previous administrations, because Ukraine has a long history of corruption, those came up because they are important to Ukraine, as well as the United States. Whether or not Joe Biden's son was making money off of Joe Biden's name from that, the idea, the concept, the company of Burisma Holdings and the corruption that they represented and the money laundering and all the allegations against them are pretty damn important. That would be why Zelensky brought it up. When it came up in the conversation with Trump, it was, again, 540 words after any mention of a favor. The favor was about the 2016 election and finding out what Ukraine's role was in that election meddling, which, depending on the if it's Russia, Democrats are all interested. If it's Ukraine, they don't care. They pretend it didn't happen because they have an agenda. One driving point, one focus of their lives, and that is to get Donald Trump. They couldn't care less about getting to the truth. You can get to the truth. You might even pursue the truth in public, which doesn't seem all that crazy. Oh, by the way, I'm looking at the audio clips here. I actually, Joe Biden called into Andrea Mitchell's show. Called in, because it's a safe space. You got to call into Andrea Mitchell. She's not really going to challenge him. And talked about Joe Biden, or Hunter Biden's cash cows that he was making, not just from Burisma in Ukraine, but from other companies around the world while Joe Biden was president. Meanwhile, Hunter had no expertise. And I thought that Joe said something very interesting and telling. and curious. Of course, there was no follow-up about it from Andrea Mitchell because that would be too much like journalism. But let's listen to just, I think it's like 22 seconds long here of Joe Biden trying to deflect, trying to declare himself innocent, but not really doing a very good job of it.
If it's not appropriate, if you were to become the nominee or the president of the United States, rather, why was it appropriate when you were the vice president for him to have foreign investments?
Well, the fact is, I was unaware of his investments until it occurred, and I've never discussed what my son's business with him because I didn't want any conflict.
Why was it appropriate then? Well, I never discussed my son's business, even though Hunter Biden has twice said that he did, in fact, discuss, however briefly, with his father that said, oh, Dad, you might notice a pile of money in the basement. Every month, $50,000 shows up. Let me tell you where that's coming from. Don't worry, I'm not selling crack. I'm strictly a consumer. But that money is coming from somewhere, and I feel that you should know as Vice President of the United States because it could put you in a bad light. By the way, Joe Biden, according to the Obama administration, was in fact briefed on his son's activities by the Obama administration because people inside the Obama administration, some underlings, were concerned that, you know, Hunter making money from governments in regions of the world where Joe Biden is vice president in his official capacity was supposed to be the point person on policy there could present a conflict of interest and was quickly poo-pooed by the vice president's staff. So there's no way on earth that Joe Biden wasn't aware of that. Putting that aside, because Joe is gone a little senile, he might not remember that. The idea that he didn't want to know because he didn't want to know if there was a conflict is the exact opposite of the way that's supposed to work. You're supposed to know everything that's going on so you can avoid a conflict. Burying your head in the sand or where last night's dinner is not really a way to avoid conflicts of interest. The ignorance is bliss argument, the I didn't know about it, don't tell me about anything, that way I can say I don't know about it. The Biden defense seems to be, I made sure that I had plausible deniability. Even though he didn't have plausible deniability because the cat's out of the bag, other people have said it. It is a horrible defense. It is a wildly irrational defense. It is a defense that no Republican on the face of the earth would get away with, yet Joe Biden says it right there to Andrea Mitchell on MSNBC, and it just flies. It's good. Hey, okay, good. Well, that may, as long as you didn't know because you didn't want to know. The mere fact that Joe Biden didn't want to know what his son was doing in case there was a conflict that he might find out about kind of, to me, lets you know that Joe Biden knew there were conflicts, right? Look, I don't know what you're, as long as it's legal, I don't want to know about it because it could get us into trouble. So just don't tell me about it. I don't think that'll stand up in court. That's something that mob bosses do. They speak in code. They say, don't tell me, don't tell me. I don't want to know. Just, I need to know that the problem is going to be taken care of. I don't want to know how you take care of the problem. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. It is shocking that Andrea Mitchell, the chief foreign affairs correspondent for NBC News, did not catch that. Did not notice that, did not ask a follow-up question such as Mr. Vice President, first of all, we know your son has said twice that you were told about this. Other Obama administration officials said that they briefed you and your staff on this, and you dismissed it out of hand. But even still, if you're trying to avoid conflicts of interest, then wouldn't you have to be painfully aware of what's going on to avoid the appearance of impropriety? Because that's kind of how it's supposed to work. But no, Andrea Mitchell just said, well, don't worry, Mr. Vice President. I've already sent in my absentee ballot for the primary in Washington, D.C. So you've got my vote, Mr. President. Back to the impeachment charade briefly. The House is still supposed to vote coming up tomorrow on the impeachment issue. Whether or not that actually happens, we'll see. But Steve Scalise came out, and this won't get much play because he's a Republican. So what does Steve Scalise know about anything? He was, you know, the one targeted for murder by the Bernie Sanders fan on the baseball field over in Virginia a few years ago that nobody ever talks about anymore. And the media moved off of as quickly as humanly possible. I think they still have reporters down in El Paso, Texas, but within 3 days they'd moved off of the attempted mass assassination of Republicans over health policy by a Bernie Sanders fanatic. Well, Steve Scalise came out and made a shocking charge that won't get the attention it deserves. Imagine if a Democrat had said that tough questions to witnesses in a secret hearing that is not classified, but just secret, and therefore governed by rules of secrecy in the House, had come out and said that every time, or when they asked questions that were deemed by the chairman of the committee to be inappropriate, the committee chairman chimed in and instructed a witness not to answer the question. That, to me, seems like it should be news, but it really wasn't. Listen to Steve Scalise talk about what happened at the hearing yesterday.
Adam Schiff, among many things, has been trying to claim that this is a fair process by saying that Republicans are allowed to ask questions. Now, he gets to choose all the witnesses and him and himself only, which means it's not a fair process on the face. But even his claim now that Republicans can ask questions has been undermined because now he's directing witnesses not to answer questions that he doesn't want the witness to answer if they're asked by Republicans. He's not cut off one Democrat. He's not interrupted one Democrat and told a witness not to answer Democrat members' questions. But today he started telling witnesses, the witness, not to answer questions by certain Republicans. That reeks, and by the way, if you want to talk about a Soviet-style process, again, that might be what they do in the Soviet Union, not in the United States of America. We can't stand for this.
Exactly, and that's the problem. This is going on behind closed doors. Is Steve Scalise lying? We don't know. Nobody knows. Can you trust a Democrat to come out and say he's lying? No, you can't, because we don't know. And if the media is going to trust every Democrat who comes out and says, well, it was a devastating day for the president, then we have to trust every Republican that comes out, do we not? Both sides, if you're being intellectually honest, have equal incentive to lie just for different reasons. This is the problem with the secrecy of it all and why this entire show trial is corrupt. Plus, a little secret. We have the transcript. We have notes. We know what was said, and there was no quid pro quo. But since everybody's all got their panties in a wad about a quid pro quo, Bernie Sanders the other day at a gathering at a J Street conference, which is a Jewish lobby here in Washington, D.C., but they're a very progressive Jewish lobby, which means, you know, progressives are progressives first. Bernie Sanders was talking about U.S. aid to Israel. Since, again, quid pro quos are bad, or we're told they're bad, I wonder if not only you haven't heard the Steve Scalise audio, but I bet you haven't heard this from Bernie Sanders. And if you listen, what you'll hear is a quid pro quo demand. Bernie Sanders will say, basically, that he will hold up Israeli aid unless Israel does what Bernie Sanders wants them to do. This is what launched the impeachment inquiry, but for some reason this hasn't registered as anything on the media scale. By the way, another part of the scandal, so-called scandal that's going on right now in Washington, is the idea that the money, the aid for Ukraine, was allocated by Congress. So the president holding it up or adding conditions was absurd and obstructionist. It was wrong. The president can't do such things. Yet here you have one of the leading Democrats for the presidency saying that he'll do just that because aid to Israel is allocated by Congress. Bernie Sanders wants to attach strings to it. Is there any outrage over this?
And my solution is to say to Israel is you got $3.8 billion every single year. All right? If you want military aid, you're going to have to fundamentally change your relationship to the people of Gaza. In fact, I think it is fair to say that some of that $3.8 billion should go right now into humanitarian aid in Gaza.
And the crowd cheers wildly, funding terrorism, because that's who controls Gaza. Strings attached, conditional quid pro quos, and thwarting the will of Congress, Bernie Sanders. But hey, when a liberal does it, when a progressive Democrat does it, it's okay. It's no big deal. It's just sound policy. What's the problem? Oh, Bernie. We hardly knew you. Okay. In other news, where should we go next? I want to talk about Katie Hill again, and I want to talk about her quickly. I just want to illustrate the absolute hypocrisy of Katie Hill. The reporter over at Red State, Jennifer Van Laar, was the one who discovered, however it happened, that Katie Hill was sleeping with Camp. She was in a three-way relationship, a thruple, and was allegedly fooling around with Hill staff, including her legislative director. That is a violation of House ethics that caused problems for her. She ultimately and rather quickly resigned at the prodding of Nancy Pelosi. Well, ever since the story broke, the story has barely been about Katie Hill, if you've noticed. There have been more think pieces about the reporter, Jennifer Van Laar, than there have been about what Katie Hill actually did. And what Katie Hill actually did, they've kind of sugarcoated. They've glossed over. They're making sure she denies an affair with the staffer, even though she resigned. So if she didn't do anything wrong, why did she resign? Why would Nancy Pelosi pressure her to resign? Nobody cares in the mainstream media. That's not worth talking about. Instead, you get a piece like this from Mediaite. Headline: reporter behind story on Katie Hill affair worked for Republican candidates who ran against Hill. Dun, dun, dun. Well, it's right there in the headline, or in the website. Red State, redstate.com, is a conservative group site. So who is surprised by this? How depraved do you have to be to think that this is a story, and to think that this is something? We've discovered this. Watching the media cover this story is kind of like watching a baby giraffe stand for the first time. Because they've forgotten how to do journalism. The 8 years of the Obama administration, they've just, all their muscles have atrophied like they've been sitting on the couch for a year. It's kind of funny and it's kind of sad because they're horribly dishonest and incredibly hypocritical. There was a discussion on CNN about this, and they call it revenge porn because there were nude photos of Congresswoman Hill that were released as part of verifying this story was true. Of course, if it weren't for the pictures, she'd likely deny the whole thing. It's kind of funny that way. And I want you to listen to a little bit of this discussion on CNN because they want you to remember who the real victim is in all of this. Not the junior staffer fresh out of college who, you know, presumably was having an affair with their boss. And by the way, at least the one from the campaign was 22 years old. So Congresswoman Hill likes them young. It's not the congresswoman, the adult, they're all adults, but the person who should know better, the person in a position of trust, it is, well, she's the victim. I mean, listen to this discussion.
I think the whole situation is quite unfortunate. The reality is that there are men who are serving in Congress right now, including her colleague from California, Congressman Duncan, who have done worse, frankly, who are under investigation by the House, who we know are spending taxpayer dollars philandering, taking their, you know, staff that they're having affairs with out, taking lobbyists out, etc. And they're still sitting there and they're still voting.
Trust
so I think
we're
that
coming,
a double
we're coming
standard
back to a double standard.
It's happening here.
Did she do the
but
right
she,
thing?
But the truth is that she's a distraction, right? The conversation was a distraction. And this is a seat that matters. I think beyond Ms. Pelosi, Sherry Bustos over at the DCCC is eyeballing the map and saying we need to make sure we maintain that seat in 2020.
Yeah.
And like, this is a bit of a distraction right now. It was a Republican pickup, want to keep it in Democratic hands. And so the politics of that matters also.
Alice Stewart, how do you see it? Do you think she made the right call in resigning?
Absolutely. And Nancy Pelosi, Speaker Pelosi, said it best. Her actions made it untenable for her to continue serving her constituents. Look, every year, members of Congress go through training on this very issue about it is inappropriate to engage in relationships with staffers. They are trained on this every year. They understand the consequences, and this goes against House rules in order to engage in this kind of activity. She acknowledged herself that it's time to step down. And this is not about whether or she is a woman or whether she is Republican or Democrat. This is about a violation of House rules, and she did the right thing. As for her, what her ex-husband wants to do about her actions, that's something they need to talk about in divorce court, and it's not something that needs to be discussed with regard to the Ethics Committee, but she understands full well she violated House rules, and she certainly should have stepped down. This is not about what anyone else has done in the past. This is about her owning up.
We don't know if she's violated House rules because this was a campaign relationship. We don't know. That's, they're investigating. I just want to make sure we're clear on that.
You can always count on the CNN anchor, except for when it's a conspiracy against the president, to jump in and say, we don't know for sure, we don't know for sure. They routinely regurgitate anonymous sourced stories by other news organizations. And there is no caveat of, we haven't verified this, we don't know if it's true, they've denied it. No, and they don't do that at all when it comes to the president or to Republicans. But when it comes to a Democrat, they're going to make damn sure that they're crystal clear. She's denied it. Of course she denied it. Then she resigned. So why would she resign if she didn't do anything wrong? Again, if what you did was wrong, it was going to come out later, but it wasn't illegal, why would you then resign? They don't want to have that discussion. To have that discussion is to be a horrible, horrible sexist. Speaking of horrible sexism, the conversation, if you can call it that, on CNN continues and gets even worse.
I want to come back to the fact is that there are all these photos being published of her. She says she'll pursue legal action. She's contacted Capitol Police. You know, and some people see this, and she alluded to this on her video, that they see this as revenge porn, or I think how she put it, electronic assault. I don't know if everyone's familiar with the phrase revenge porn. So let me just ask you, can you define it as best as you can?
Sure. So revenge porn, or what she called electronic assault, essentially happens when usually an ex or some sort of romantic or former romantic partner takes or uses explicit photos in a way to publicly humiliate someone they want to get revenge on. Victims of revenge porn are not always women. They're usually women. Perpetrators of revenge porn are not always men, but they are often usually men. You know, and the point is essentially to target women for being sexual creatures and to publicly shame them. Women have lost their jobs around the country for having these photos disseminated. They've had professional consequences. It's disturbingly common. And, you know, it's something I think we should be talking a lot more about.
So let's keep, I want to stay on this. This is a huge part of this story. Do you think, in essence, by resigning, that she is letting the extortionists, those who are putting all these photos of her out there, did they win?
No, I don't think so. I think Hill's doing the right thing. Having an affair with a subordinate is wrong.
Yeah.
I think we can say that.
Yeah.
I think we can also say that revenge porn is many, many magnitudes worse than a consensual affair. And so by resigning, Hill, she's done the right thing. We all agree, all right? That's off the table. She's resigned, over. Now let's talk about what happened to her, what she was a victim of, and what, frankly, Congress should be doing to make sure that no other woman ends up in Hill's position. There should be a federal revenge porn law. That's something that every legislator should be pushing for. Congress should be looking at, for example, Red State, which published these photos from an anonymous source. We're all kind of assuming that was Katie Hill's ex-husband. It seems like it probably was. We don't know for sure.
Yeah.
Whoever it was, Red State gave him the cover of anonymity. That is wildly irresponsible, and it probably should be illegal.
It probably should be illegal. Now, as leftists scramble to let everybody out of a prison because they're in prison and we've overcriminalized and we have mass incarceration problem, they keep proposing new ways to put conservatives in prison. Don't you love the entire discussion is about how Katie Hill is a victim here. Oh, poor Katie Hill. Poor, sweet, sweet, nourishing Katie Hill. All she did was allegedly bang a staffer, and she's got to lose her job for this? If she's so proud of what she did, if there's nothing wrong with what she did, if she didn't do anything wrong, she could easily stick around and stick this out. But she isn't. She's resigning. Why is that? And she's simultaneously painting herself as a victim because that is what leftists do. Now, you heard Jill Filipovic, or whatever the hell her name is, talk about how this is what happens to men. Men or women, men do this to women all the time. The UK Independent has a piece. Katie Hill wasn't held accountable for her actions. She was thrown on a pyre for the benefit of men. Ooh, she's again the victim. Now, the entire Me Too movement and the sexual harassment feminist movement since the days of Anita Hill, yet curiously absent during the presidency of Bill Clinton, was about power discrepancies in relationships. Bosses, supervisors, you're not supposed to be able to date somebody you work with if there is a power discrepancy, because how's your secretary going to break up with you? How is your personal assistant going to break up with you and keep their job? That's just inappropriate. You should never get yourself into that situation. Well, a member of Congress sleeping with staff, or a member of Congress sleeping with campaign staff, what are they going to do? How are they going to break up with them? It doesn't matter. They're a bunch of hypocrites. The big question everyone in media was asking, including the Washington Post, would this have happened to Katie Hill if Katie Hill were a man? Well, first of all, we don't know what Katie Hill identifies as, and given her relationship fluidity and her open marriage and God knows what else, we don't really know how she identifies. But it is kind of curious because all of these people who are supposedly learned journalists seem to have forgotten the name Joe Barton. If they're so concerned about revenge porn and being run out of Congress because of it, the name Joe Barton should come to mind. Let's get in the Wayback Machine, shall we? It is 2 years ago from 1 month from today. So November 30th, 2017, Chicago Tribune, Texas Representative Joe Barton, embarrassed by sex scandal to retire. Republican U.S. Representative Joe Barton, Texas's most senior member of Congress, announced Thursday that he won't seek re-election after a naked photo of him circulated online and a conservative activist released past messages of a sexual nature from him. The photo of the 68-year-old Barton was posted to an anonymous Twitter account just before Thanksgiving, and Barton apologized. He also suggested he could be the victim of online exploitation by a woman he'd been in a relationship with, whose name has not been released. Now, isn't that interesting? A woman released a naked photo of her ex-boyfriend. Now, for the record, Congressman Barton was single. I believe he was a widower. So he was not having an illicit three-way affair or any other kind of affair with this woman who did it. Yet Democrats were more than happy to point out that Congressman Barton had embarrassed himself and disgraced his office for even having the photograph taken, for allowing the photograph to be taken, and therefore he must be run out of Congress. In a way, he was slut-shamed, as the left likes to say about Katie Hill. Yet there was no such concern about we need a law. We must get to the bottom of it. We must find out who this woman was who released it, and she must be thrown in jail, and any website that published it needs to be prosecuted. What they did was just wrong. It didn't happen. So instead of wondering, would this be happening to Katie Hill if she weren't a woman? How about, no, it wouldn't. How about, would people be arguing that the Congress member of Congress is a victim were she not a woman? Because that's the real question, and that's the truth of the matter. As a disturbing aside, Chris Hayes, the androgynous bowl-cutted guy with the round glasses who follows the androgynous bowl head hair-cutted woman on MSNBC, had a segment the other day that is, it should, look, if you have kids of dating age, or if you are a, you know, a single person in your 20s listening to this program, here's a pro tip for you. Don't let anybody, including yourself, take naked photographs of you. Period. End of story. That would save you from a lot of embarrassment. There are apparently lots of pictures of Katie Hill, and I imagine video as well, of her and her girlfriend and her husband and maybe the other girlfriend and her husband. Who the hell knows? Don't let people take pictures of you naked. It doesn't matter who they are. There's no reason to immortalize your nudity. There just isn't. But listen to this discussion that Chris Hayes had. It's rather disturbing about millennials. I don't know whether it's disturbing because it's true or it's disturbing because this is what they think it's true and therefore, you know, a reflection of the circle they run in. But they believe that in the future, the very near future, so many millennials have so many pictures of themselves and take pictures of themselves doing everything that they're going to be ruined. There are a lot of naked photos being out there. Now, Hayes, being a complete and total hack, frames it as if you're a Democrat, you can't date a Republican because they'll ruin you later on in life. But this is a bipartisan thing that they don't want to acknowledge. They're all just trying to run defense for Katie Hill. But the overall point here is disturbing.
The other thing that someone on the All-In staff raised today that I thought was a great point is that, like, Katie Hill, I think, is around 34.
Mm-hmm. 32,
right? Mm-hmm. There is an entire generation of Americans who have been taking selfies and images of themselves in various contexts, whether at parties or in intimate relationships and consenting adults. And those images, like, there's going to be a generation of members of Congress and politicians where there are thousands of images just around. And it's like, we're going to have to decide as a society if we're going to let that be some permanent, like, source of blackmail, that every person that has a grudge out for you for the rest of your life that you dated in college and then you go on to be a Democrat and they're a Republican is going to be able to, like, bring you down with.
Yeah, those damn Republicans taking nude photos of everybody. They just can't get enough of it. Send me tasteful nudes. Don't send me tasteful or distasteful nudes. I'm not interested in your nudes. But here's a pro tip for everybody out there. No matter who you are, no matter what you do, no matter how much you love who you're with, there is no reason whatsoever to have somebody, to let somebody take a nude photograph of you. Unless you're a model or something. And then if you're a model and you got tasteful nudes or even distasteful nudes, if you're a female supermodel, send me the pictures. Those pictures I'll take. And I love the idea that, you know what, young kids today, they just can't help but have photographs taken of themselves naked. It's pretty easy to avoid having your picture taken naked. You're naked and somebody breaks out a camera, you say, what are you doing? No. And if they try to insist, or even if they just break it out, they're not really all, they don't have your best interests at heart. Let's just put it that way. And it's probably a good thing if you leave them. I'm not telling you how to run your life, but it's probably a good thing if you leave them. This next story comes to us from the World's Worst Timing File. It happened out in Arizona on Saturday. This is the chairwoman of the Democratic Party in the state of Arizona. Her name is Felicia Rotellini. Nice Italian name there. Felicia Rotellini. And she was at an event on Saturday afternoon with, it was a panel discussion, and she was on the panel. And the reason this falls into the world's worst timing category and makes it funny to me is it took place about exactly the same time that President Trump was ordering the raid that killed al-Baghdadi, the founder and leader of ISIS. Now, what does that have to do with the discussion in Arizona amongst politicos? The chairwoman of the Arizona Democratic Party in this audio says that the president basically loves ISIS. He's in league with Saudi Arabia and ISIS. That's, it's It's also an illustration of how unhinged Trump derangement syndrome makes people become. Though I don't know Felicia Rodellini, maybe she was unhinged before, but I find it interesting that she thinks that the president is in league in bed with Saudi Arabia and ISIS at the very same time the mission was launched to kill the leader of ISIS. It's also a little peek into the mind of the left who, you know, if you aren't one of them, this is what they think of you, basically. Listen to this.
The inspiration of leaders who are going to put people first is so important, and that's going to make people vote. Another reason why people are going to vote, because Donald Trump is manipulating the White House and has aligned himself with ISIS and Saudi Arabia.
I have to say that that is not true. That is not true.
But just let me say, the most important thing that we can do today is vote for civility, vote for a president who's not going to align himself with the most dangerous foreign nations that are the reason why we had 9/11.
You gotta love that. The president has aligned himself with ISIS and Saudi Arabia. He's in league with the worst countries, the worst, our enemies. Now, Saudi Arabia is now our worst enemy. Saudi Arabia has problems. But then blaming Donald Trump for 9/11 retroactively somehow. He's in league with people who gave us that. By the way, we need civility. We need to vote for people who will bring about civility. My political opponents are in league with terrorists. We need civility restored in American politics. The people who don't agree with me are Nazis. She doesn't see a disconnect between those two things. She doesn't view the president any different than she views you. She doesn't view anybody she disagrees with any different than she was referring to the president of the United States. You are with them or you are their enemy, period. That's all they care about. And they want to shut you up. The final story today is a disturbing look deeper into the mind of the political left. It comes to us from the pages of the Washington Post, and it comes to us courtesy of the former editor at Time Magazine. Remember Time Magazine? Richard Stengel, former editor of Time and author of Information Wars, was the State Department's Undersecretary for Public Diplomacy and Public Affairs from 2013 to 2016. Now, it's kind of telling. Richard Stengel, if you saw him, you might recognize him from MSNBC, where he still serves as a contributor. But I find it interesting that he was the editor of Time. Then he left that job to go and work in the Obama administration. Now he's back to being a political commentator and journalist again. It's kind of funny. Well, he has a piece in the Washington Post. And by the way, the human potato, Brian Stelter over at CNN, doesn't ever seem bothered by people going in and out of the Democratic administration and then back into journalism from journalism. You know, normally somebody leaves a post like editor of Time to go work as a deputy undersecretary of something in an administration. People would think, huh, maybe we should look back at the work he did. Maybe it wasn't on the up and up, but no, he's on their team. There will be no questioning. Here's a piece called Why America Needs a Hate Speech Law. Now, it's weird that a journalist or former journalist would advocate for the gutting of the First Amendment. But when you realize that he wants to appoint himself and his friends the arbiters of what constitutes hate speech, you begin to see that this is really nothing but a power grab, a fascistic power grab under the guise of tolerance. Stengel writes, quote, "When I was a journalist, I loved Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes' assertion that the Constitution and the First Amendment are not about protecting free thought for those who agree with us, but freedom for the thoughts we hate. But as a government official traveling around the world championing the virtues of free speech," I don't think he'd really champion them that hard, "I came to see how our First Amendment standard is an outlier. Even the most sophisticated Arab diplomats that I dealt with did not understand why the First Amendment allows someone to burn a Koran. Why, they asked me, would you ever want to protect that? Because once you start banning that, what comes next? The same reason we allow the burning of the American flag, as detestable as that is. it is allowed because we have the First Amendment. Your Quran is no more sacred than the Bible or the American flag. Sorry, Arab diplomats. That should have been his... He should have actually explained to them why we would allow such a thing. Because we allow everything. You can do what you want here. You don't have to like it. We don't have to like it. But you're allowed to do it. That's what sets this country apart, or makes it an outlier, in his words. But Stengel did not explain any such thing. He continues, quote, "It's a fair question. Yes, the First Amendment protects us and protects the thoughts that we hate, but it should not protect hateful speech that can cause violence by one group against another. In an age when everyone has a megaphone, that seems like a design flaw." Can you imagine? It goes on from there. It gets worse and dumber. But can you imagine a world 5 years ago where the former editor of Time magazine is now advocating for limits on free speech in the name of tolerance because some people might be offended, because some people might say things we don't like? You have to realize that all the people advocating for such things, and they're all on the left, they all want to be the ones to determine what is hate speech. So speaking out critically against progressive policies, that's hate speech. And you must be re-educated and perhaps carted off to a camp of some sort where said re-education could be coupled with a work-study program that will hasten your death. They never, ever call hate speech... Oh, I don't know, the speech that inspired James Hodgkinson to go after Republicans and try and murder them on a baseball field. They don't ever consider hate speech calling the President of the United States or anybody who happens to agree with him on any given policy issue a Nazi, a horrible person, a racist, a sexist, a homo, you name it. They don't view that as hate speech. Why, they're uttering those words in defense of and in response to hate speech. And they would never do anything hateful if they could just get everybody else to shut up and agree with them, or actually shut up or agree with them. Eventually they would make you have to agree with them. They wouldn't allow you to shut up, because that's where the left is moving. But I find it very disturbing, his last paragraph in this so-called think piece. "All speech is not equal. And where truth cannot drive out lies, we must add new guardrails. I'm all for protecting thought that we hate, but not speech that incites hate. It undermines the very values of a fair marketplace of ideas, and the First Amendment is designed to protect." These people, ladies and gentlemen, are Nazis. They're revealing it every day, a little bit more. Nazis, communists, they're Hitler, Stalin, Mao, Castro, you name it. That's who they are. They haven't pulled the mask off completely, but they're so out of their minds with Trump derangement syndrome that they now have insulated themselves to the point that I guarantee you this piece, this column in the Washington Post came from a conversation he had at a cocktail party. Or at a dinner party. The smart set that he rolls with, because he doesn't know any normal people, he thinks they're smart. They may have degrees across their room, but they're educated beyond their intelligence. I bet that this conversation resonated with a lot of people at the dinner party. And he thought, you know what? I'm going to write a piece. The world needs to know. We need to move in this direction. It's not just Stengel. It is many people in the media, and sadly and frighteningly, so many people in Congress are starting to inch toward this way of thinking, that we need to police our speech. They're equating speech with violence, and trying to limit speech, I hate to tell them, would actually lead to violence, and that violence would be absolutely 100% justified. Anyway, we are out of time. Thank you for listening. It's already, what day is it? It's a Wednesday. Holy cow. If you want to enter to win Jarrett Stepman's book signed, The War on History, email derek@dailycaller.com. You have until 10 p.m. Eastern Time on Thursday to do that. We'll be sitting down with David Limbaugh on Thursday for Friday's show. Got that to look forward to. I've got to write up the post and get to bed at some point. Be ready. Be back here. Thanks for spreading the word. Be back here tomorrow. I'll see you then.
I've never discussed what my son's business with him because I didn't want any conflict.